Welcome to the Retirement Risk Show, the best retirement interviews and advice with Dave Hall. Learn strategies to help you reduce and even eliminate the risks facing your retirement.
Hello, everyone. It is that time of the week again. You are back listening to the Retirement Risk Show. My name's Dave Hall. I'm your host. This is the place where we help you get through the longest self-imposed period of unemployment most of you will have in your lifetime. Could be 10 years, maybe 20 years. Heck, it could even be 30 or 40. It is what we call retirement. If you've not yet gone to my website, please do so, retirementriskadvisors.com. Here you're going to get access to all the tools, the planning resources, the education platforms, everything we have to help you deal with the various risks that you're going to deal with as you look to a 20 or 30, 40 year future. Today, I'm very excited about our show. I've got with me Ryan Frederick. He is the founder and owner of Smart Living 360. He's also written a new book called Right Place, Right Time, The Ultimate Guide to Choosing a Home for the Second Half of Your Life. We're going to be talking about longevity. We're going to be talking about where you live and what an impact that can have as you go through that second half of life. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
We've had a great discussion before. I mentioned we probably should just turn the recorder on and went through that process as we're going through it together. But one thing we didn't talk a lot about is how you got into this space. What created an interest in helping people figure out where they should live and how it can affect their happiness?
Yeah. So Dave, it wasn't part of a master plan. You know, it kind of happened. I majored in electrical engineering in college, worked in Silicon Valley, and a particular company went sideways and made me take a step back and say, what do I want to do with my life? And this was in my mid to late 20s, and went to Stanford Business School. And from there, really got focused on the role of place, particularly in the second half of life. I've worked for private equity firms. So I've been on the investment side. I've been on the operating side for several large companies in the senior housing and kind of related spaces. I've developed new communities around new models for housing, and I've advised dozens of groups from Fortune 500 companies to smaller single site organizations across the country, but also several globally as well. So I've seen, call it the supply side of what's out there. And in that process, I got more and more questions from people saying, it's great that you know this, Ryan, but can you help? Can you help my dad or my parents or me as I sort this out? And so one thing led to another, and that's really where the book came from, was to give people an objective resource and framework for how to think about the importance of place in your decision-making, particularly in the second half of life, and what are the range of different options, and then encourage people to lean into strategies to improve place and therefore their life.
Ryan, when we talk about place, how far are we going? Are we talking about a state? Are we talking about a community? Are we talking about an individual home? What does this cover?
Yeah, place, Dave, is a bit of a nebulous term. Like, what do we mean by that? And so I think it's helpful to define it in a fairly broad way, because I think sometimes when we think about place or home, we think about our four walls of your apartment or a house and so on. And that's true. That absolutely is part of your place. But place is a composite of more. It includes what the neighborhood you're part of. It includes the metropolitan area. Are you in an urban, rural, suburban setting? What state of the country? What region? What country, for that matter? You know, your lived experience is influenced by all of that, that composite. And so when we think about what's the right place for a given moment in time, you might not have all of those in sync. You might love your house, but find out that the neighborhood changed. You don't know the neighbors. Maybe it's not as safe as it once was. And that might give you pause. At the same time, you might be in a thriving metropolitan area, then find that your house, your four walls isn't necessarily, you know, working for you the way it could. So there's a lot of different elements here. But the reason why you even do the work, Dave, is that this is one of these decisions that really matters.
Yeah, I assume that it's got to have a huge impact not only on people's happiness in retirement, but to some level, even their longevity, because if we're happy, we all seem to live a little bit longer.
You know, when I did the research for this book, Johns Hopkins University Press is the publisher, and it's great because they have great resources around research for this topic as well. And what I found is, to your point, Dave, that to some degree, you really earn your longevity. Researchers tell us that our longevity is largely linked to lifestyle environment than our DNA. So when we say my grandparents live this long or my parents live this long, that's great, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to live that long. In fact, only about 7% of our longevity is linked to DNA. It's much more about these lifestyle habits and environments. So do you have purpose that you can point to that's ideally larger than yourself? Are you socially connected in ways that help nurture you, but also you nurture others? Are you physically active? Are you moving? Are you sleeping? You know, eating well? Are you financially secure for a longer life? Recognizing, as you point out, you know, you might have decades of retirement. And then lastly, in just in terms of place itself, do you have that emotional connection to place? And then does it meet your physical, you know, needs and desires? So it absolutely is a key driver. I like to share with people that if you care enough to watch what you eat, if you care enough to try to exercise regularly, you should care just as much about place. Am I in the right place? And part of that too, Dave, is that how our social networks are contagious. If your friends are obese, you're more likely to be obese. You know, if your friends are more active, you're more likely to be active. And so we are influenced perhaps more than we care to admit around the cultural elements of where we live. So it has it's multidimensional in its influence.
This conversation is so interesting to me because I have 8 kids, talked about that with you before and talked to our listeners many times about my children. So much of my housing choices are based upon my kids. In fact, right now, I'm not a huge fan of my house. I'm glad that we have a home. I'm glad that we have a place to live. It's a beautiful house, but it doesn't really fit the needs of our home life, but it absolutely fits the needs of our school life. In fact, the district we're in is way better than anything around us. So we've got to stay inside of this area for now. But I've got to believe that there's a number of people that once we get out of that child stage, we're so used to doing everything based upon where our kids need to live that it can oftentimes become hard to look outside that box and say, yeah, but this doesn't really work for me anymore. I need to get into a different location. You seeing that as well, Ryan?
Absolutely. You know, and I think even this retirement word is complex because I remember watching the baseball playoffs about a year ago, and a batter hit a ball to left field, and the play-by-play announcer said, the ball was caught, and the announcer says, the batter is retired, meaning like they're wiped off the board, wiped off the field. And so there's an element that, and we'll get to place in just a moment, but I think it starts off with how do we start to imagine a longer life? And I do think a key piece, as you point out, is that empty nester stage. We haven't been quite as aggressive with you. We stopped at 3 kids, but even that enough, that can feel all consuming. And so your life, your decisions, a lot of it does get influenced by these kids. And so when they're gone, you take a moment and say, wow, what do we want our life to look like? And in some cases, like you're describing, if you have a vision of what you want life to look like, but you're not in the right place, good luck actually trying to realize that new life. And so I think that there's a challenge and opportunity in when you become an empty nester, when you quote unquote retire, when you're in your 70s and 80s, as you think about different health considerations. What's your vision at a high level for what you want? And in some cases, it's not just you, it's your spouse, partner, other factors there. But if you see what that vision is and then you solve for place, it really improves the odds. And I think what's the good and bad about it, Dave, is that, for example, take the kids out of the equation, you now have a lot more degrees of freedom. And so that's good because it creates options, but also is challenging because you have options. and so you have to sort through, well, which ones matter to me and how do I think about it? And I think that therein lies, again, just the challenge and opportunity, but it's one that matters. You know, really, really matters here.
But I assume also, Ryan, that as we look at this, that it's going to change some throughout our retirement years. I mean, that period of time could easily be 40 years as we look at it. I know for myself, I'm one that moves every 5 to 10 years. I think it's a good way to declutter, to make sure I'm not a hoarder or my wife isn't, that we get rid of stuff and we move to a new home. But I would expect, and we've done it ourselves to some level. At certain times, we started our career in Las Vegas. I wasn't a huge fan of the Vegas school system, wasn't a huge fan fan of the things my kids were getting exposed to. So we moved back to Utah, lived there for a decade and raised our older children. And then we go to Puerto Rico and get our kids in private school and then come here to Tennessee, to the area we're in, just because of schools. But again, that keeps changing based upon those needs. So what are you seeing with the retirees as they're going through these cycles?
Really, great question. And it ties to the title, you know, Right Place, Right Time, because it suggests that you have to be mindful of what your needs and desires are by stage in life, and also recognizing that not only do those change for you, but places change as well. Like maybe a place is more exposed to climate change. Maybe there are political considerations which make it less welcome for you. Maybe there's other factors, as I mentioned, like neighborhoods change, you know, and some tax policies change that can make places more or less attractive. So I think that there's a romanticism of, I'm going to pick one place, one physical dwelling, and it's going to be my forever home, and I'm done. And I can tell you that I like that idea. I like the allure of making a decision, but rarely is that the right strategy across all the changes of life. And so I think that there's a lot of wisdom in this idea of being able to regularly just assess, is this really the right place for us right now? You know, I have in the book, I include an assessment tool, one of the early chapters, and people loved it so much, I created an online version that thousands of people have taken. And it's a great first step for people to say, across these broader measures of purpose and social connection and so on, am I really in the right place? And so I think it starts there, Dave, to say, okay, well, sounds like you already have a sense of where you fall on this once your kids are off, you're an empty nester. But hey, in my new stage, how does it fit now with what matters to me? Again, that changes over time. I've seen people in their 70s and 80s, for example, you know, they're more cognizant of just health considerations, whereas not as much of a driver for people in their 50s and 60s. You know, there's an issue in empty nesters, like you sometimes being around your kids, and that network allows you to meet other parents and friends. So without that connection, how do you meet people beyond those, you know, especially if you move somewhere new? There's a lot of factors, you know, in this that are important as you evaluate these decisions.
Ryan, how important is connection? You talk about that. I know this world we live in now with Zoom and doing everything electronically seems to get a lot of us that even were outgoing and very active before into a little bit of a, hey, I can be okay being home, but I was talking to you a little bit about it before. I'm now getting out quite a bit and I'm realizing I'm not okay being home, that it was changing who I was as a person. I realized that I wasn't as happy and engaged with other people as I'd like to be, wasn't able to help as many people as I enjoy helping because I never came across people when I wasn't getting out. How does this impact people as they go through these retirement stages?
Well, I think you have situations where we're influenced by our personality type. So you have, it may be a different experience for the extroverts than the introverts among us. That said, our brain is wired for face-to-face, in-person interaction. Like literally our parts of our brain, they light up in ways that doesn't happen over Zoom. Now, it's great that you and I can have this conversation right now that would have been so difficult without some of these technologies. So there's a lot of positives, absolutely. But there is definitely a situation where, you know, you have something where regardless of our personality, like profile, we need levels of interaction and people that we can depend on and support and vice versa. You know, you may have seen this, but in this era of loneliness, and loneliness is subjective, right? It's like the level of connection that you wish to have relative to what you actually have. And people that are chronically lonely, so you can be lonely as an extrovert, lonely as an introvert, people that are chronically lonely has the health impact of smoking basically like 15 cigarettes a day. That was a meta survey done several years ago. These feelings aren't just feelings. They literally impact our physical bodies in how they manifest themselves. So I believe we're in an era where there's less social cohesion in general, pre-pandemic, now post-pandemic. Technology is great, but it makes it harder sometimes to connect with people. And so in my view, It makes place even more important because some neighborhoods, it's in the water. People just, they say hi to each other. You know, they help each other. Some places have front porches. There's more we call third places, like parks, where people, you know, that you walk your dog and you see people. And without some of that, I think it's especially as we have less of a routine in a retirement phase, it can be, you know, your life can easily find a situation where you're just not interacting with people in the frequency that that is healthy, regardless of your personality type.
One of the biggest things that I see from people is they seem to lose purpose. They seem to get to a point that I was in the workplace or I was raising children and people needed me and I was able to contribute and was able to get back. And then we get into this retirement phase and all of a sudden we're again, if we're in the wrong location, not getting out, don't have all these connections, we start having some issues there and can become a big problem.
I believe it starts with purpose. And in the assessment tool I have, you know, there's a section that talks about that. And we need a purpose at every stage in life. And ideally, you know, it's greater than ourselves. And it actually is the greatest predictor of happiness is to be able to say that. And as strong health measures, it can be helping a neighbor. It could be you've got, you know, kids or grandkids in the area. It could be, you know, serving the local soup kitchen. It could be involved in your faith community. There's a bunch of different answers to that. But I am concerned, as you are, that without probing that a little bit, and each stage has different opportunities and challenges for purpose, we can find ourselves isolated through place. We don't have people around us that have common interests. We don't have people around us with common areas of purpose. Like, you're not setting yourself up to succeed in situations like that.
As we're having this conversation, it brought back an experience I had in Puerto Rico 5 years ago when Hurricane Maria came through the island and everything gets decimated and many homes get flooded. And our neighborhood luckily was designed to where we didn't have that many issues. We had no water issues. We ended up living in a neighborhood where all the electrical lines were underground, so they didn't blow down. We had palm trees, not big blooming trees that caused a lot of the damage. But there were many neighborhoods that for months just had junk piled out front of their house. And I often commented as I went by there, absolute worst thing you could do for someone if you're trying to, you know, ruin their hope is to say, we're just going to leave all your house junk out here. Every morning you go out to go to work or go do whatever you're going to do, you're going to sit here and look at everything that's there. And as we talk about this with retirement, I've got to believe that same thing's happening to people, but over years, they may not even realize that they're waking up in the wrong city, in the wrong neighborhood, in the wrong home, not being able to do what they want to do. And just slowly they're losing the hope. And again, what leads to that early death rather than the longevity that we should be enjoying.
And there's something, you know, we talked about earlier before the podcast around this, something called the U-shaped happiness curve. And you don't hear about it in the popular press. It's quite a popular blog I've had on my website for several years now. And the research has been there for quite some time. And that is that it's a global phenomenon. It's not just a US thing where you have a certain level of happiness in your 20s. And then your late 20s, and then it starts to go down. Start going down, and then in your mid to late 40s, 50s, it really hits this nadir or low point. I like to think it might have something to do with having teenagers in the house. And then it picks up. It picks up. And then so in your 60s, 70s, 80s, you have the self-reported well-being. Really, happiness is higher than it's been at any stage in life. So this idea that youth have a monopoly on happiness is garbage. It's like for retirees, it means part of it, we can be ageist to ourselves, that we were programmed, our society, our culture is programmed to think I'm going to be lesser tomorrow than I am today. Again, and that's antithetical to some of the research I'm describing about the U-shaped happiness curve. And so part of what that means is we should lean into these extra chapters. And it's not just longevity. It's not just lifespan. It's having a correspondingly long health span and wealth span. So what can you do to optimize the odds that you are physically active? So you have a high degree of quality of life, but then you also have the financial resources to be able to pursue a lifestyle that is acceptable, you know, to your expectations. And that requires planning. Of course, money, it puts yourself in the spot where you can optimize the chance of doing some of the right kind of lifestyle things, you know, that make a difference. So it is, to your point, there's a real challenge, but I see opportunity with purpose and retirement. But if you start to pull the pieces together, get the right building blocks, and my argument is places like maybe the biggest one, actually, if you get that thing right, you get the wind at your back to be able to execute on these things that matter to you.
But I believe a lot of it's also got to be about balance. When I look at what happens with many people that may be in a situation where they've got this amazing home, but they can't afford it. It's just too much for them. And so they're miserable every day because they were trying to figure out how they're going to pay for it with their fixed budget in retirement, and see various situations like that.
More than 50% of CPAs will run out of money in retirement, and this number is projected to grow because of risks like inflation, increased longevity, and rising healthcare costs. Retirement Risk Advisors has the perfect solution to help CPAs make their money last as long as they do. Learn more by signing up for our flagship webinar, Getting Safely Through Retirement. In this webinar, we share the top 10 financial risks CPAs will face in retirement and what can be done to reduce or eliminate each risk. To get started, visit retirementriskadvisors.com/safe.
One of the things I do want to bring up, we're starting to run out of time here, Ryan, but before we finish, do you ever encourage people, are there ways for people to kind of kick the tires? I mean, obviously your book can open the eyes to people to better understand what they should be looking at, to open some questions that they should have, but are there opportunities for people if they're looking at getting into maybe a different area that they go rent or live there for a year or a period of time, maybe go on vacation there to better understand it? What are some thoughts you have there?
Yeah. So I strongly advocate what you're describing. So in the book, I talk a little bit about this concept that's used in Silicon Valley and among a number of innovative companies, and it's called design thinking. It's kind of a fancy term for a relatively simple concept. And that is, if you have a hypothesis, go create a prototype, test the hypothesis, and then see what you learn, and then change the prototype. And then see what you learn. And so the reason I say that is I know of stories. I talk about a couple of stories in the book of where people, in this case, these are people on the East Coast living in kind of the New York area. And they're like, we're going to Florida. And they sell their house and they move down to Florida. And then they find out that Florida is not what they expected it to be. And at that point, they sold their house. They bought a new one. They downsized. A lot of the possessions are gone. They can't just push a button and go back to their old life. They can't go back to where their old friends are. Similar thing happened here. I live in Austin, Texas. Similar thing happened to a neighbor. They were in a house, empty nesters. They sold their house, moved to a condo downtown. First 6 months was amazing. After that, they realized that some of the food, the restaurants were good, but not as good as they thought it would be over time. They missed their friends. Their friends wouldn't see them, even though they're 20 minutes away. And then they missed that garden. And so after a year, they decided they sold their condo and they moved back to the neighborhood. Houses are more expensive, had a hard time finding a house, all that stuff. These are costly decisions. And so I strongly encourage people to really be thoughtful on this. A, to have a plan, vision of what they want, but then test that plan. One of the things that's happened related to this book, Dave, is the book, it's been awesome to see impact, the notes I've received from people. I've also found that some people need some extra help sorting this out. And it's hard making changes just from it takes courage too to execute on this. So I'm in the process. I'll be adding workshops for people to help create a plan for people. So you can have, oh, here's my place plan, you know, circa 2022 that we thought about and now we can choose to execute on or not. I think that'll be helpful to have people come alongside with a framework and structure to get to that better place where you can make some of those decisions and then test some of the hypothesis like I just described.
I would agree with you. We need to have something to look forward to. The more we can plan it out and have a vision of it, the more it becomes reality, the more it becomes part of our lives and motivates us to move forward and to make the things happen, to allow things to move forward. Ryan, we're at the end of the show. We need to wrap up, but I want to give you an opportunity to let people know how they can learn more about what you're doing through your website, and then also where they can get the book, Right Place, Right Time, The Ultimate Guide to Choosing a Home for the Second Half of Life.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. A couple things. I would encourage people to go to the smartliving360.com website and take the brief assessment. You know, it's a good way to get a sense of where you are in your journey. At the same time, you know, I know quite a number of you are advising others with their financial plans and thoughts. And I believe increasingly, given some of the dialogue I've had with wealth advisors, financial planners, et cetera, is that this planning for a long life financially has a strong tie-in to place-based decisions. So I think that there, as I mentioned, I'll be launching these workshops. I think it'll be helpful to figure out what sort of content might be helpful also to your clients as this plays out. So love to hear from you. You can reach me at Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at smartliving360.com. But again, the assessment's a great first place to start, and there'll be more and more tools and options available for people.
Perfect. Listeners, I know we've talked about it before, but one of the other things that really should spur your decision here is that longevity. Remember, when we talk about it, we've talked before, if I were to go out and survey each of you and find out how long you thought you were going to live, over 50% of you would underestimate your life expectancy, and 28% of you would do it by 5 years. And if you do the right thing, it may be 10 or 15 years longer than you'd expected, but done in a happy environment, a peaceful environment, a time where you're in control, you're in charge, you're the one making the decisions and allowing your life to happen the way you hoped it would play out rather than what society's going to allow. So we're going to wrap things up here. Thank you again, Ryan, for being on the show. Listeners, please join me again next week where we'll have another guest back talking about the things you need to know to help you get safely through retirement.
And that's today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. We come out with a new episode every Friday morning, and you don't want to miss it. If you want to continue the conversations from our podcast, join Dave every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Central Time on the Retirement Risk Advisors Facebook page as he answers your retirement questions live.
The Retirement Risk Show is a production of the Retirement Risk Advisors. Our show was produced by Sierra Talin and Autumn Koenig. If you're a CPA looking for more retirement education, visit retirementriskadvisors.com.